Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
It's Monday, just over a day into NBA free agency. I'm Kevin Zimmerman, joined by Kellen Olsen for the Empire of the Suns podcast. The Suns reportedly have agreed to a deal, a one-year $15 million deal with Trevor Ariza. We'll get into that a little bit, but the most recent news is that Devin Booker and the Suns are going to meet Tuesday and discuss his contract extension.
Shams Charania reported that Booker is upset after the Tyler Ulis news. Scott Bordeaux reported that this was, for an hour and a half, it was really annoying because everyone was speculating that this was due to a lack of communication. We never got reporting that that was the case, and then Scott did confirm that this was due to a lack of communication. There's like 19 different angles this can go. I completely agree with everyone that this has happened a bunch of times now and it's unacceptable. At the same time, it's kind of a weird ask. Gambo was kind of tweeting about this, like, how does your line of communication work? Do you just put them all in a conference call together?
That's the only, yeah.
Because as soon as Ulis gets cut, he's calling Booker right away. Like, that's how best friends work. That's how that's going. He's telling his best friend, all right, well, looks like I'm playing somewhere else. So that's probably what happened. They probably told Ulis first. He probably told Booker before they could reach Booker and tell him. And there's obviously right ways for the Suns to go about this, and they managed to go about it wrong this time with the most important piece. He's more important than Dragic or Markieff Morris or Eric Bledsoe ever were, but at the same time, this is a repeating pattern, and that is concerning. Kevin, do you think they should fire Ryan McDonough? I don't think so at all, but it's concerning.
If this was the first instance, it would just be like, okay, of course he's upset. That's his best friend. Move on. But one, they keep putting themselves in position to do things like the Morris twins with their contracts. They thought they got gypped on it, just a deal in general, which is kind of silly. But yeah, it's... when you don't learn from your past mistakes, that's not good looking. That said, I know Devin Booker is super important and more important than McDonough, but also you can't have a 21-year-old... like, what if he told him, like, a month out, hey, I'm thinking about waiving your friend because we need cap space. Do you think Booker would take it better? Probably not, but...
at least when you draft Elie Okobo, like the day after, say, like, we didn't expect him to be here. We took him. That probably isn't good news for your friend. Like, that's probably the
but
best way
to do it.
But he
could be upset then, too.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There's a lot of different ways to read it, but Scott's report was, like, the most important thing. And they set themselves up for this when they drafted Tyler Ulis. Now, it's not their fault that Tyler Ulis was not very good and did not turn out to be the player they thought he was, but this was a possibility of happening, that he was a second-round pick that doesn't work out, and now you're letting go of his best friend, which, again, it's a business, yada yada, who cares? Tough guy act and all that kind of stuff. It's a business. Move on. Yes, but right now, with the fragile state of the Suns and how much of it relies on Devin Booker and that they are one of the least respected organizations in the NBA right now, and this is why, because this stuff keeps happening.
Let's talk about that contract extension. So I believe it's Robert Sarver, McDonough, James Jones are all going to be meeting with Booker and his agent. And we can't really, I don't know what there is to talk about. I guess it's really, you could treat it as a free agent pitch, like put a video presentation together, treat him like this is how we foresee our future. I think that's how they should handle it, because really the money part, there are not that many decisions to be made. He's worth a max deal. He's the franchise kid. And so it's really just winning him over for the future vision, I believe. So hopefully, you would hope that things kind of move quickly, because if they're meeting, like we discussed this, they could have put it off to next summer, and that cap number is going to be different if they don't have his new contract locked in. And maybe they discuss that. I don't know. That could still happen. But I'm assuming a report about what they're going to do is going to come out this week, you would hope. Because if it doesn't, that's not good from like our perspective, not being an insider or a fan's perspective.
If we don't hear anything, that's when it's time to siren the alarms. I was kind of whatever at him being upset. It's like his best friend was working with him, and he worked with him every day and got to hang out with him all the time, and now they're barely going to see each other because that's the way the NBA works. So I would be upset too if that happened in my workplace. But to the point about cap space, the thing that everyone was pointing to, and it's funny because people before this were talking about like the Suns should be smart about this and they should wait until next summer, because I believe they open up $13 million more in cap space if they sign him to the extension next summer. It's somewhere around that number. But now when the report came out, everyone's upset. It's like, what are you doing? Sign him right now. You can't have both sides. And the Suns need to pick the side of just paying the man now. Just give him his money. He's not going to turn down a $157 million extension. Look, if it was Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton and Josh Jackson and Mikal Bridges didn't exist right now, and it was just Devin Booker and that's it, I could see why he maybe wouldn't sign it and would go through restricted free agency and then maybe ask for a trade in a year or two. But they've put the right young pieces around him. He wanted DeAndre Ayton to be the pick, and so did Josh Jackson. That's what they got. Seems to be pleased with playing with Josh Jackson and other guys. I don't see why he would ever turn down the money at all in the first place, but the most important thing is showing that we signed Trevor Ariza to help you guys now, and we're going to have that cap space again next year when we sign all these guys. We're not even going to make you wait until next summer to sign it when we could have more cap space. We'll have enough, and we'll get this guy and that guy while you guys grow. And we project that for the next like 6 to 7 years, we're going to be winning at least like 35 games and probably upwards of like 50 in like 3 to 5 years. And that's where upwards of 50 to like 60, that's what they would hope, at least with all those young guys projecting the right way. And that's where you can entice him and he should stay. But it's frustrating because I didn't really see it as a story. It's like he's going to take the deal. Everyone takes the deal, but now it's become a story inevitably because he was upset. But yeah, that's really all I have to say on it.
It's more timing. Yeah, it's like even Shams's tweet and everything we know from follow-ups from Bordeaux and everything, or it shouldn't affect ultimately taking $158 million or whatever. Like, even if you were working with your best friend, like, you would, in the back of your mind, you would know, hey, my best friend didn't keep his job, but, you know, he wasn't pulling enough weight.
Pay him the money. Don't try and cheapen this. Pay him less than the
max.
I
would really hope that that's not a thing that they discuss.
It's
pretty simple. The negotiation is pretty simple.
He just averaged 25-4-4 and shot well from the field. Like, I don't care if he plays no defense right now. Pay the man.
Yep. Moving on. Trevor Ariza, let's look at this two ways. Let's first just discuss him as a player before we get into how he fits. I liked it. Like, when the first report from Kevin O'Connor from The Ringer was linking him, and we didn't, it was like him, Avery Bradley, and someone else. It was Julius Randle, I think. Ariza, to me, made a lot of sense because he's the closest thing, and we discussed this a million times before, the closest thing to being a good defender and a stretch four. He is a power forward, like, in his age. He's going to be 33, I think, or he just turned 33. He's a stretch four now, but he still can guard small forwards. I think that's the biggest thing, is he has that versatility. He's a slightly above average three-point shooter. David Griffin, the former Suns executive, former Cavs GM, went on Twitter and said this is a great get for the Suns, and I think people don't respect Trevor Ariza as much as they like people in the NBA. He's one of those guys, kind of like where PJ Tucker was on the Suns. Like, people respected him, but it just wasn't like, oh, he's the ultimate hardworking guy. Channing Frye used to like rave when Channing Frye was in his prime. He'd be like, Trevor Ariza just shuts me down. Like, I can't he just admitted, like, I can't do anything against that guy, which against him, that's one thing. We'll see. This is kind of a different NBA even from then.
Maybe it's because of our expectations going into free agency, but I love it. I didn't see Ariza plausible for a year. I just didn't understand why he would take a year deal right now. I guess he believes that he has a lot of longevity left and his big payday can come next year, just like how J.J. Redick's is going to come right now with Philadelphia. It's a very similar type of situation. The Suns are not going to win 50-plus games next year like Philly did, but it's the similar thing. You're paying a premium on a one-year deal for a guy who is going to give you exactly what you need. They needed a knockdown shooter and a reliable veteran for Ben Simmons to get the ball to and space the floor. The Suns needed someone who could defend and shoot. Ryan McDonough said that they wanted a stretch four who can also defend, and we were like, those dudes don't really exist. Trevor Ariza exists, and he's a great fit because the thing I realized writing about it the night of is that Igor Kokoshkov has no reliable veterans on his team for 25 minutes a night. No one. Tyson Chandler is not going to play over 25 minutes a lot. I would be surprised if he does at all. And Brandon Knight is a complete unknown at this point. If they don't trade for a point guard, which we'll get into later, then I guess that tells us that they're pretty high on him. But, of course, the signing of Ariza himself, he's a great defensive player. I worry if he is going to be able to be great with Phoenix because of all the young guys they have. I think you can look for him to be good. But asking him to guard four is a lot, and along with that and just such a young team around him where a lot of his duties are just going to be the Jared Dudley putting people in the right place. Kobe's detail show on ESPN Plus highlighted Ariza a lot when he was looking at the Rockets, and he noticed that Ariza kept telling Capella, get down the floor. And it's like one of these things where Clint Capella, who's awesome, just for some reason wouldn't get back on defense like as with urgency as some of the other players. And at one point, Ariza literally pushed him and was like, get down the floor. And like Kobe was laughing at it and seeing that he would do that. So imagine him doing that with DeAndre Ayton quite a bit defensively. Imagine him doing that even with like Josh Jackson and Mikal Bridges, who both profile as guys who are going to be pretty good defensively. Obviously, Devin Booker fits into that category too, and that's where he makes a ton of sense. Look, it's not many guys can take like five attempts from three a game and shoot like 36% or better. There's only like 10 or 11 guys who did that in the league last year, and he is going to be one of those guys and just makes a ton of sense. This team does not need any more scoring at all. They are fine on scoring. They need just supplemental role players to do the right things, and that is what he is going to provide, and that is why he is a great signing. Yes, it's a logjam at forward now, but I think that's going to sort itself out here in the next couple of weeks.
You wrote about it too, where that one-year contract, obviously the Suns probably targeted him as like, we know we can go out, offer this guy at midnight Eastern, because it was 9 o'clock here, and his team has so much to do. They have to get Chris Paul back. They have to sign Capella, which they haven't done yet as of Monday morning. And so they're like, all right, throw money at him for 1 year, see what happens. And that was something we didn't even foresee, because I kind of thought, why would they not bring him back if you're Houston? Like, I know he played with Mbamute, PJ Tucker, and all those like stretch fours, and even Ryan Anderson, but he was the most important one. Maybe you could argue PJ was down the stretch, but they already have PJ locked down, so maybe they just were like, well, we can't do anything. And that's...
No, the Rockets immediately like jumped down a tier in terms of a team without him.
Yeah.
He was huge for them.
It oddly, like, the Suns side of things is underwhelmed. Suns fans, I think, seemed underwhelmed at first, but the Rockets side was like, oh no, we just, like, did we just lose our grip on maybe pushing the Warriors? When you just look at pure, I think it was wins above replacement or whatever the heck you call it in basketball, there was some stat where it was like LeBron moved the Lakers the most so far in free agency. The Suns were second in like jumps and expected wins, just on losing Ulis and signing Ariza. So that's one stat that I'm just using, obviously, to tell the story. But I think people aren't giving him as much credit and seeing this as big as it might be.
And maybe this is a J.J. Redick situation. They win 37 games next year, and they're like, you know what? We have this space. Let's just bring him back on, like, 2 years, 30. Like, that's... There's no complaints if that's the case, and he plays really well and proves that he has at least, like, 2 years left at that level, which I think J.J. Redick definitely proved in Philly. And it could be a mirror situation, and I don't think there's anything really wrong with that, despite aspirations for guys like Klay Thompson and so on and so on. We won't talk about that because that's something we're going to be talking about a lot in the next year, I bet. What do you think about point guard now? Because the point guard was seen as more of a need than a power forward, especially from hearing what McDonough had to say in the offseason and everything. It sounds like they were focused on getting a point guard. They don't feel like Brandon Knight and Eliakobo is enough, or if they envision something where Brandon Knight starts and they play Jackson Bridges and Ariza together, like that, I don't think that's in the plans right now. But now the question becomes, who do you trade? How much can you get for those guys, and who's available?
It's almost like it's tied to the power forward thing to me, because as we discussed when they drafted Bridges, it was already an overloaded position as far as options. They weren't great options. Like, even Josh Jackson, if he takes a huge leap forward, I don't know if he's a great power forward option. I don't think Mikal Bridges is a great power forward option as a rookie, because I honestly think he's more of a shooting guard than a power forward. But that aside, bringing Ariza in really just emphasizes that even more, where I think they're going to trade one of Bender or Chris, and Chris is not on the summer league team and apparently he's going to be working out. I think it was Seattle at home. So I don't know if the writing's on the wall for him. That's a huge assumption to make right now, because I don't know what his trade value is, but you could float cash and him his contract or something for like Patrick Beverley or something in trade market. I mean, that's all it would take, where the Clippers are like, we have a lot of point guards, we could use some youth, develop some guys. But yeah, I think there's going to be a trade here. I just don't foresee. Let's see. Fred VanVleet's off the market. Rondo was a guy you could just link to Ryan McDonough because of their history, where McDonough was like a huge champion of drafting him in Boston. But Rondo, I do not think, is a fan of playing for a team like the Suns, where they're just trying to figure out how to win. He would be awesome, though, if he was down for that. He would be awesome, because he's like what you talked about Ariza, when he's making teammates be accountable. Like, he talks so much. If you sit like close to courtside or courtside at a Pelicans game last season, like, he yaps all the time. So I think that would be great, but I don't think that's going to happen. So I don't know what else is on the market, man. Like, Avery Bradley's out of their price range now, unless they, again, trade one of those, like Chris, just to get enough cap space.
Alan Williams' contract is the big thing here. It becomes guaranteed on July 6th. That's also the day that they can officially sign free agents like Trevor Ariza. They don't even have the space for Ariza right now. That is the writing on the wall for Alan Williams, that he's done here, at least for $5.5 million. He has a contract where it is seen as an asset now, because there are teams that might be looking to open up more cap space right now, and you can trade them Alan Williams' contract in one of these deals and give them $5.5 million in cap space, basically. They can waive Williams and get cap space.
Or keep him, and I think he has an option for the next season, so it's like, that's an expiring deal. Those $5.5 million, at least, they used to be, they're pretty valuable, because that's oftentimes, like, if you're doing math just to make it even, that's a swing piece. So, yeah, that's a good point about his... July 6th, I believe, is his deadline, and they've pushed back two other guys this so far, so maybe they could even push that back and look for a trade if they don't get anything in the next few days here.
I think you're looking at the expendable assets and just wondering how much they're going to give up. I think giving up TJ Warren, one of Marquise Chris or Dragan Bender, I much prefer it to be Marquise Chris. I think Bender is just such an easier player to exist with these guys, and just... if he can just stop being so much of a the ball, man.
Yeah.
Just shoot it. If he can do that and then just keep improving defensively, he was better in his second year than his first year, then that is going to help more. And than whatever you get out of Marquise Chris, which we still don't know. So Chris Warren, Williams, and like a draft pick or two, how much is that going to get you? I'm not really sure, but that is an offer where you can really get someone good and not give up a ton in the process. It just depends on what that point guard is. Zach Lowe reported the Suns are not interested in Dennis Schroeder. That is a sigh of relief because he is not a good fit with Devin Booker at all. There's Kemba. There's
Kyle Lowry. I don't know if Kyle Lowry. I feel like we could hear some of that, but that would be kind of like, this isn't working out, man.
Kyle Lowry makes a ton of money, too. He makes $30 million, so you'd be paying him and Brandon Knight $45 million, I believe, over the next two seasons, which is asking a lot. But Kyle Lowry is also, I think, someone who's getting pretty slept on here. Like, he just makes so much money. It's an albatross of a contract. Like, he's a really good point guard. And
yeah, his, maybe next year.
His contract isn't, like, for 7 years or anything. It's not like the John Wall contract where you're just
You can't do it.
It's not like that. So I'm not really sure in terms of trade targets. Obviously, Patrick Beverley or Milos Teodosic makes the most sense in LA just because they have too many guards right now. Even by letting go of Rivers, they still have one too many, and the Suns need a point guard. So that's where the match is. But it was kind of weird just to see them sign Ariza on the night it opened up. And I believe it was under an hour officially. And then, boom, the cap space is just gone. They have a couple of options left to sign guys. Maybe they'll add a name or two, but their big moves are over unless there's a trade, which we expect at this point.
Anything else? What else is happening? LeBron signed with the Lakers. We could talk about that if you want, because that's... I'm just like, I'll take watching him more. As Suns fans, I don't know if they'll like that. It'll be interesting to see if that fills Talking Stick Resort Arena with more or less Laker fans. Probably more.
A lot more, because, yeah, you're combining LeBron fans and Laker fans into this super unstoppable troll force of trolling.
Congrats, Clutch Sports. Congrats.
Yeah, good for them. I think that and Paul George staying in the West and potentially Kawhi Leonard being traded to L.A. and re-signing with L.A., are just indicators that the Suns need to slow down. Do not trade Josh Jackson for Kyle Lowry or Kemba Walker. Do not do that. Like, just don't do that now. Don't do that in a year. Don't do that in 2 years. Like, just chill out, because there are no playoff spots available. There weren't before this happened, and there certainly aren't after. Like, even if Paul George goes to Philly and LeBron goes to Boston or whatever, there were still the same teams around that there were before. I mean, you look at the standings, the Rockets and Warriors are obviously going to be at the top again. The Lakers are going to win at least 45 games with LeBron, like at least. And who knows who he has around him, but that's going to happen. Portland's interesting because maybe they look at this, and we were looking at the roster at the end of the playoffs after they got shellacked by the Pelicans, and we're like, is this the last time we see Dame and CJ play together? Who knows what their roster looks like? But Oklahoma City, Utah, New Orleans, Minnesota, Denver, those teams are not going anywhere. Even if San Antonio trades Kawhi and they get like Ingram, Kuzma, and picks, it's like they're still going to be a 40 to 45 win team, because guess what? They won 47 games, almost all of those without Kawhi. They were a 47 team win without Kawhi. It's not like he leaves and you're like, oh, what happens to the Spurs now? They were still the Spurs for the most part. And this is not mentioning teams like the Clippers who might hang around. Dallas is certainly a team to watch for. They should have been like a 30 to 32 win team last year, but they just weren't. And now they add DeAndre Jordan and Luka Doncic to that. Memphis still has Mike Conley and Marc Gasol. They added Jaren Jackson Jr. Maybe they can sneak into 40 wins. This is chill. Just, I know.
The Kings have a fun group of young people, even.
Yeah. The decade-long playoff drought is basically happening now. That's pretty much locked in with this. That's fine. This is just how it goes sometimes. The hard part's over. You have all the young pieces. Just chill.
I think that's what's the most interesting thing is last summer when the timeline came up, it was, let's just wait for 2020. And right now, like after Booker had that great year last season, they kind of tried to shut that down. Like McDonough's like, all right, we got to accelerate it. And to me, that's just... you have to say that so Booker's going to be confident in signing. Like, that's all that is. It was not, we're going for it this summer. You don't have the cap space. Obviously, you signed Trevor Ariza, you're almost done right now. Even if you made a bunch of trades, you would have to unload so much just to even make a wave if you had anyone else to sign. But who else is left on the market? Aaron Gordon didn't even really think about leaving Orlando, it looks like, from what we saw. So really, it's just PR changes in the discussion about the timeline. The timeline's still a thing. Like, it's still next summer. It's still when Dudley, Chandler, and even Ariza come off the books. It's waiting time. And that's why Igor is the key now, because it's teach them how to play basketball. And that sounds like a very hard thing to do.
It's on those young players like DeAndre Ayton. If he plays and develops like most number one picks, then it's going to be fine. If Josh Jackson projects like a top five pick, it's going to be fine. Mikal Bridges can play great defense and hit threes at a really good rate. It's going to be fine. Where I worry is just with McDonough's, it's GMs that might have their job on the line. Who knows what he does? And even in free agency, it's like if you sign Kemba Walker to a four-year deal in 2019, you better do that knowing that you can still hold on to guys like Josh Jackson and Mikal Bridges and DeAndre Ayton with their contracts coming up eventually. And even guys like Bender or Chris, like let's say one of those two guys or both those guys have breakout years, you want to keep them. You want to re-sign them. Even someone like Elia Kobo is going to, if Elia Kobo turns out to be good, he's going to have a huge raise coming up. Because he goes from making less than $2 million a year to being a guy that could earn 10 to 15 in his next contract if he plays well. So that's where you have to focus. Like, yes, Klay Thompson, yes, Ricky Rubio, yes, Paul Millsap, like all these guys could be free agents in 2019. But that is, the priority is those guys, keeping those guys. And it should be. And I think they will do that. It's just, you never know. If it's 2019... and they have certain expectations to meet, then we just don't know. And that's going to be not terrifying, but it's just going to be something to watch. Because, look, if they do that, it's not horrible. It's not the end of the world. But if you give up one of those guys for the sake of someone like Kemba, like, yes, you're going to make the playoffs a couple of times, but maybe you're turning down like championship-level aspirations for the sake of doing so.
Yep. We will be podcasting as this kind of rolls along. We'll probably just do it if there's news to talk about, if there's a trade, if there's another signing, we'll get back on the podcast machine. As always, we appreciate it. I'm Kevin Zimmerman, closing down with Kellen Olson.